today on the Rising Coaches Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Rising Coaches Podcast. I'm your host, Brian Bender, and today's episode is brought to you in part by HDI Intelligence. HDI Intelligence is the first full-service analytics company to operate exclusively in the world of college basketball. Schedule smarter, prepare smarter, play smarter. Also, if you're not already a member and are interested in joining the largest coaching tree in basketball, visit risingcoaches.com to sign up today. You'll build genuine relationships with other coaches, have access to amazing content that will allow you to develop your craft, expand your network, and see job opportunities on our member site that don't get posted anywhere else. For more information, please visit risingcoaches.com. We have a special guest today, all the way from UNC Greensboro, assistant coach Donnie Lind. How are you doing today, sir?
I'm doing well, Brian. How about yourself?
Good. Can't complain. Looks like you're home tonight.
Yeah. Try to get home as often as I can to do dinner and bedtime. Thankfully it's late summer when we're recording this, when our guys are all gone and get a little bit of more flexibility to do that.
There you go. You're on coach's vacation where you go home for the night. It's perfect. Well, tell us a little bit about your coaching background, how you started and how you got to where you are now.
Yeah, I was a bad player and thought I was better than I was, much like a lot of the young men we get the privilege of dealing with. And so I was being recruited to play Division III basketball, thought I could play Division I. And so I went to Loyola College in Baltimore because literally my junior year in high school, they went 1-27. They were the worst Division I team in the country. And I said, if I can't play there, I can't play anywhere. So I went there, and unbeknownst to me, they had fired the coach and brought Jimmy Patsos in, and he brought in a bunch of really good players and flipped the program real fast. And although I got close to playing, I never got to that point and got hurt and ended up being a student manager my last 3 years there at Loyola, and hated it, didn't want to any part of it for about the first half of the season. I had a mindset that I should still be playing, and felt bad for myself and sorry for myself. And, something flipped in me at some point there, and realized that I have an opportunity even as a manager to help these guys and serve. And that kind of sparked in me the idea of wanting to coach. And the coaches there, Jimmy and Gigi Smith, especially, they really, helped me in my journey and figuring this out, that this could be a profession for me. And even though I, like I said, didn't play, never scored a bucket in college, but learned a lot and got to do a lot. That was back before at Loyola, we didn't even have a director of basketball operations. There were three assistants and Jimmy, our SID did our travel, So when they had somebody like me who was a manager who wanted to help, they just kept giving me stuff, hey, learn how to do the video, learn how to do film exchange, learn how to book the travel, whatever, man, whatever you want to do, we'll let you do it because we need all the help we can get. And so, for my last 3 years, I learned a lot from them, and then got fortunate. Jimmy and Gigi, they helped plug me in over at VCU as a GA and worked with Coach Smart there. My first year as a GA was the year we went to the Final Four. And so I thought coaching was really easy. I thought this is going to be like, this is like a regular thing. Like, this is just what you do. And had a ton of fun. I worked with Mike Jones and Mike Rhodes and Will Wade there. They were the assistants, and Kyle Getter, who's in Virginia now. He was the director of ops. And so it was just an unbelievable group of guys to work with and start to learn this profession from. And from there, I got to stay for a couple of years. I think I met you during the film exchange days when I want to say Battle for Atlantis in like 2012. There was some backroom film exchange deals going on in Atlantis. And from there, Jamie and Christian hired me at Mount St. Mary's to be an assistant. Got right from video to assistant coach. Never have had the privilege of being an ops guy. And don't want to go back and have to do it if I don't have to. After 3 years at Mount St. Mary's, Coach Jones called me about coming to Radford, and did it. Was there for 5 years with him. And then last year, he got the UNCG job. And thankfully in this business, I worked for a really, really good person who there was never a question of whether we were going with him. We all, he told us when he got the job that we all were coming. And so it was choose to be unemployed or choose to go to Greensboro. And so got to just finished our first year down here.
Yeah, great stories along the way. It's awareness is such a hard thing. And just finding that awareness, I guess, when you were a player thinking you were one thing and then becoming a quote unquote manager, has that helped you at all, you know, help relate or try and, you know, knock some sense into some of these guys in your early coaching years?
I hope so. I mean, I think that, you know, it, all of us as humans, you know, the more self-aware we can be, the better. And I try every day, and I'm sure I fail a lot at that, but I think trying to help them realize that, you know, none of them are as good as they think they are. And they need to think that they're good. You know, part of what makes a player good is that kind of irrational confidence in themselves and their abilities. And so, you know, yes, we want them to have that, but we also want them to understand that their strengths are only great when they're highlighted amongst the strengths of the other guys. And so, you know, trying to have them play their strengths and not necessarily bog themselves down with the stuff that they're not as good at. And if they can become aware of that sooner, then that'll only help us. And so, you know, trying to relate and trying to share, you know, how I figured that out. And hopefully they don't have the same experience, but at least they can help, you know, learn a little bit from that.
Yeah, that fine line between ego and confidence and still being humble and figuring all that out, it just kind of goes hand in hand. So you started at Loyola and you were able to get, you know, hands-on experience, and you said you kind of skipped the ops job. It's not very common that you kind of go from a manager, even GA, straight to D1 assistant. Why do you think, other than your success in winning, was a main reason why one of those guys brought you with them?
You know, I went from GA to video and then video to assistant.
Yeah,
so I don't want to be, you know, overly simplistic, but, you know, certainly, you know, it was because I worked hard. You know, I definitely, you know, the work ethic piece, you know, one of the things that was unique at a place like VCU is that, you know, we have 5 or 6 GAs when I was a GA. And so, like, we become like a team of guys that are getting everything done. But in the back of your mind, you know, we all are competitive dudes. Like, you're also competing with these guys a little bit. And trying or at least I figured that out. Maybe not all 6 of us did, but, you know, I'm like, they're not going to hire all 6 of us. So what can I do to separate myself a little bit? And, for me, I think, you know, maybe it was my father a little bit in me, but, you know, I don't say no very often, you know, or I don't know how to do this we are so fortunate in the day and age that we live right now. Like, I got the whole internet right here.
Yeah.
Like, I can go look up how to do anything. I can go watch a YouTube video if I want to put the time in to learn how to do pretty much anything for free. And so, you know, early in my career, especially, like, any task that came my way or through the office that people were kind of hemming and hawing, I just took it and said, I'll figure it out. Yep, I'll get it done. And it's a lot of, you know, it was a lot of, you know, learning by failing and figuring it out. And some of those first Photoshop mail outs I made were really bad, but, you know, I kept at it and kept learning new ways to do things. And same with learning how to do the video and learning how to do, you know, things like that. And so, and I think because of that mindset, Coach Christian trusted that I would learn how to be an assistant. Because everything else that he gave me that I didn't know how to do, I learned how to do. And so, you know, showing that ability and that capacity helped me more. It's not like I was connected to any players and he knew if he hired me, I could get him a guy. You know, I didn't have any of that background. It was just, I trusted my work ethic and trusted my integrity and trusted that I would do a really good job at any job. And so when he had the opening, you know, he took a risk, took a chance on me.
For sure. That's awesome. You mentioned a battle for Atlantis back in the day, and that's, you know, it brings you back the glory days. I've been in JUCO for so long. We haven't taken a foreign trip in a long time. But, you know, going to Atlantis and, you know, the back room film exchange. Hey, I got you. Even if we don't play each other, like, we'll just directly exchange it. You made it a lot easier, and it built my network. A lot of my beginning stages in this profession were people you work with or camps. And then, you know, the film exchange. What have you done to continue to stay relevant in terms of, you know, your network, especially kind of being in a family that's had tremendous success with Shaka and Coach Christian?
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of gone on in that VCU tree.
Yeah, it's interesting because, you know, it's one of those things that's I'm not good at. I'm not as good as I want to be at all. And for the younger guys who are getting in, you know, Film Exchange isn't a way to build your network anymore because everybody, there is no, you don't have to talk to anybody to get film. At least at Division One, you're getting everything off Synergy. You're never even having to deal with anybody. And so, you know, trying to be creative and find other ways to connect. I think COVID helped a lot of us because it allowed us to take time away from, you know, maybe not away from our job, but everyone was doing it. So we all spent more time talking to each other. And then just trying to follow up, you know, those conversations, when we had now that, you know, with recruiting, I think, you know, finding the balance between I don't want to be the guy on the road who's spending more time talking to the other assistant next to me, who I might not know yet and not watching the game enough. But finding that balance of not wasting that opportunity to get to know somebody, to, you know, pick somebody's brain about a program that, you know, hey, he's sitting right next to me. I'm not going to waste that opportunity. But it's an area that, you know, I want to be better at. You know, I think networking is one of those things that I neglect the horizontal networking. You know, everybody wants to network up with, you know, for me, with head coaches and ADs to try to get my next job. And I really, really want to network with young guys and help them because, you know, I needed a lot of help when I first got started and I didn't grow up with a dad who was involved in basketball or, you know, I didn't play at a high level. So I needed people to help me. So if there's ever people that are looking for help, I'm always wanting to network with those people and help them. But I don't do a great job of networking with the people that are the other assistants that are like me. You know, when I was younger and doing video and being a GA, maybe it happened a little bit more. You'd play a manager game or whatever it was, and you'd meet somebody that way or work a camp or run the camp, you know, then you get to move up to run the camp and then you meet everybody that comes into work. But, you know, and those guys over the last, whatever, 10, 12 years are the guys that I talk to all the time now. And they're the ones who have helped my network so much because they've all moved at different rates and to different jobs and to do different things. Some of them aren't in coaching anymore. Some of them moved to admin. Some of them are in high school. You know, they're all over the place. And so, you know, trying to find those avenues, I think, for me now, it's definitely on the recruiting trail, but just trying to make sure I follow up and do that is something I'm not the best at, but I'm always trying to improve on.
Yeah. Something that's kind of similar to, you know, you talked about the networking piece. There's also the basketball aspect. And not that you've worked for only, you know, you've worked under one kind of family tree, you know, other than Coach Bastos. Well, tell us a little bit about, you know, how each guy has done similar things, but in a different way.
Yeah. You know, we all have taken a lot from our time with Coach Smart, you know, and for obvious reasons, you know, so much success. And he's, you know, just so intelligent and so willing to share with, you know, with us and involve us in everything that he did. But, you know, moving from Coach Smart to working for Coach Christian, you know, I feel like everywhere we've gone, we've done less and less, progressively less pressing as I've moved on, even though it's all in the same family of guys. You know, at Mount St. Mary's, we pressed, but we didn't really. And Coach Christian, just like we were talking about before we started, like I think he's really more offensive minded. He wants to help his team score. And so, you know, he sees that as a big part of his job while he's coaching. And figuring out ways to put his guys in really advantageous positions to play to their strengths and that. So, you know, we got away from a lot of the stuff we were doing offensively at VCU and got into a little bit more at the time, you know, was kind of cutting edge with some of the ball screen stuff we were doing. Now it's kind of, you know, run of the mill of what everybody's doing. But at the time, you know, we were really spacing the floor and putting a ton of shooting out there and, you know, and then making teams, you know, make a decision in the ball screen of how they could guard us. And so I learned a lot offensively there. And now when I came to work for Coach Jones, again, pressed less, even though he is very much a defensive minded coach. He is a defensive rebounding first, you know, no matter what. And, but we, you know, we started out and we were, you know, on the line, up the line and denying everything. And then as time evolved, you know, we evolved. And, you know, we really changed and packed it in a lot more. And but we're still, you know, really hard to score on. And offensively, he's kind of allowed me to put my stamp on what we do. And that's been a lot of fun for me. You know, I've used every resource out there, whether it's, you know, going on and watching clinics, talking to people, you know, studying tape, and then, you know, with the magic of the internet and everything we can do now, just picking up the phone and calling somebody or emailing somebody or, you know, seeing if somebody will hop on a Zoom with you and talk to you about what they do. Our last year at Radford, we completely changed our offense. I guess it was coming out of COVID. And it was, you know, hey, we were all on some Zooms and coach wanted some new ideas. And so, you know, we all presented and when we got back something that we liked and, you know, the one that I did, you know, he loved the concept because, you know, and loved the ideas and shoot allowed me to put it in and run with it. And just for now, for three straight years, I've had that experience of designing and implementing what we're doing has been awesome.
Yeah, it's awesome when you get that ownership. And I think it's a tribute to your head coach to allow you to continue to grow and develop and have new ideas and not be stuck in your ways and continue to evolve, especially over COVID. It's kind of a cool concept to, hey, bring your ideas to the table. We don't have as much going on, busy time, and able to do something like that. But at Loyola, VCU, you had an unbelievable mid-major experience, you know, and then you've kind of climbed. Each job has probably been a little bit better. And talk a little bit about being at that low and mid-major levels and, you know, speak on that from a Division One, you know, coach.
Yeah, levels. No doubt. Yeah. You know, VCU was certainly, you know, far the mountaintop of basketball programs and resources and all that. I was there when we went from the CAA to the A-10 and just see the, you know, the investment and everything that it takes to be successful at that level. I wanted to go to Mount St. Mary's, and Mount St. Mary's is unique because it's a place that loves basketball. You know, they absolutely love basketball at Mount St. Mary's. You know, Jim Phelan was the coach there for like 50 years. And when he retired, he was like fourth all time in wins or something like that. So they've had a history of loving basketball, but they certainly in the NEC, you know, did not spend money at the level that, you know, that you're used to when you come from VCU. And, but it, you know, it's cliche and everyone says to be big time where you are, but you can't allow the resources to be a deterrent to get your job done and to stop you from bringing in the guys you need to bring in or from building the relationships with the guys. Like, resources shouldn't affect that, right? If you believe in building relationships with your players and helping them become their best, and that's how you measure, you know, a lot of your success, then, you know, that can happen regardless of how much money you have to spend. And so, you know, going to that level and seeing that you can be really successful without having excess, without having as many t-shirts, without having, you know, quite the same travel arrangements, you know, and taking long bus rides, and it's fine, you know, and you're not at a competitive disadvantage at that level either. You know, it's, everybody does, you know, you're doing, you know, you're able to compete, you know, you're certainly funded enough to do that. And like I said, there's administrative support at that level at a place like Mount St. Mary's. And so, yeah, you know, we didn't charter any flights, but we our guys were taken care of. You know, if we needed something, you know, we could play an extra guarantee game and go do it, you know, or something like that. You know, we've tried to be creative with that sort of thing. And there's certainly challenges, but there's also a lot of fun opportunities. And, you know, it helped me to become an assistant, I think, for the first time at that level, because, you know, we didn't have to win a lot of recruiting battles, but we had to win a lot of evaluation battles, because most of the guys that we signed there didn't have other Division I offers. So if we offered them, we were going to get them most of the time. But, you know, we really tried to pride ourselves at that level of out evaluating people and having a really good understanding of what we were looking for, what it took to be successful there at Mount St. Mary's. You know, Mount St. Mary's has like 1,000 students, maybe. You know, they probably wouldn't want me to say it's in the middle of nowhere, but it's an hour from everything. Like, you're not very close to anything. You know, the town of Emmitsburg is not Greensboro. It's not New York City. It's not Radford. You know, it's a very, very small town. And so, you know, you couldn't just take anybody because he was a good enough player. And you kind of had to be selective in that, someone who would fit in that community. And so, you know, I thought we were evaluated really well. Coach Christian really, he was a first time head coach figuring it out and was really flexible in how we were evaluating and what are the things we're looking for. And hey, this worked and this didn't work. And let's really try to hone in on what makes someone a successful player at Mount St. Mary's for us. And so, because like I said, because once we weren't going to beat many people and in recruiting, that guys had, four or five Division I offers, it's going to be hard to beat them. So let's evaluate better than everybody else and let's try to find some guys. And shoot, we ended up with several really good players, guys who played pro for a long time and won championships. And so, certainly worked. And then going to Radford, like you said, it was one small step. It wasn't a giant step up, but it was certainly a place that, had a little bit more resources, that had a different type of school, a state school that was a little bit bigger, that felt like you could recruit just about anybody to if they were the right guy, if they were the good enough player. We could recruit junior college kids. We could recruit, guys that were, qualifiers and nothing more. And so that opened up some new avenues to recruit. But it was similar experience as far as, resources wise and that level. The Big South was a really, really good league. But it was pretty even as far as, there weren't haves and have nots, pretty even once Liberty left, at least, it got to be where pretty much everybody was doing things the same way. But it's when it's that, I don't know, for me, like, I don't care if, how we get to the game or if I get, one sweatsuit or two, like, I'll be fine. And I think the guys will be fine as long as they can compete every night and they're not, you're not the bottom of the league where you don't feel like you can compete. And I've been fortunate, I think Mount St. Mary's at the time in the NEC was one or two as far as jobs go. Certainly VCU when it was in the CAA, now George Mason and ODU were in there then. It was a really good job, but it was one or two, maybe three at worst. And, then go to the A-10, and now it's, but even now it's one of the best jobs in the A-10. And Radford's one of the better jobs in the Big South. It's top half for sure. And then to come to Greensboro, and now I'm at that mid-major level again, I feel like. It reminds me a lot of when we first got to VCU before the Final Four run when Coach Smart first got there, where there's investment, there's success, there's resources, there's, we can win some recruiting battles. We can get in there and get guys who are really, really good players. I joke with guys all the time, like, I haven't gone to a sneaker company AAU game and watched a kid that like impacted winning for the previous, 7 years, 8 years until we got here. Because those guys are, if you're going to a high level AAU game, most of the guys we're recruiting are like, how well did he clap on the end of the bench for most of the game? Unfortunately, it's kind of just the way it is. And so again, we had to evaluate, we had to go to some of those really small tournaments and find guys that were under the radar that people didn't realize. And so trying to keep that mindset when you come here, certainly out evaluate people, but understand that yes, we can also, other people are going to think these guys are good too. The guys we need to win, like, there's other people who are going to think they're good. So what do we have that differentiates us? What do we have that can be separators for us? And, a year in, we're still trying to figure some of that stuff out. We have really, really great facilities here. We have, opportunities coming. We're not in the forefront, or the cutting edge of NIL, but I think it's something that we're going to have to leverage, and we're working on leveraging to help us. I think it's a place that, we play in a beautiful arena and play in the Greensboro Coliseum that has all the history of all that. And so it's definitely a different recruiting experience, a different experience for our guys. And, we only had one guy come with us from Radford to UNCG. So only one person and the coaching staff got to understand really what the difference was, not just having like real restaurants in town and like places that you can go, in walking distance of campus, but also, the basketball side too, of how much, the resources are and the difference that makes for their experience.
Yeah. Unique perspective for sure. And you've done a great job at all those stops as well. And yeah, you continue to, slowly but surely keep climbing that coaching ladder one day at a time, staying present. We both worked with one guy. I think both of us for 6 years. So Ron Jersey,
yeah, legend.
gave me a lot of coaching advice, gave me a lot of life advice. He was always kind of a very level head for me as a young guy. Give me your best Ron Jersa story.
Are we PG rated out here, or how close to PG rated?
We can go PG-13. We may not.
Okay.
Go.
Okay.
My wife's grandma watches all these.
Okay. Okay, that's fair. Coach Jersa was the elder statesman on staff for us. You know, he's older than our head coach, Coach Jones. He was, you know, and so he definitely had a different relationship with our guys than everyone else. But he was shrouded in mystery a little bit, it seemed like, to our players. Like, because they would get some stories about him, like when he was a head coach and some of the things that, you know, because, you know, that he had done or whatever. And so he kind of played that up a little bit with our guys. And so he had the scout of one of the really, really good teams in our league every year. And it was the same team. He had him every year. And I'm not going to say who it is, but he took pride in trying to win that game, you know, because a lot of the times, you know, they were 1-2 in the league each time we played them. And we were always one of the better teams, and they were always one of the better teams. And so, you know, we battled it out with them a lot. And so Coach Jones lets us, before the game, us assistants, whoever has the scout, with about 30 minutes on the clock, we have a little video presentation where we can review something, X's and O's wise, whatever we want to do, really. Most guys just kind of review the personnel again of the other team. And then you get your, like, you get your time, right? You get your time to, like, fire the guys up 30 minutes before the game or give them something. And Coach Jersa, all week had been talking about, you know, hey, we got to just roll up our sleeves and go to work against these guys. Like, we got to be, can't be afraid to get dirty. We got to roll up our sleeves. And he gets in there and he shows his little video, and then he's like, guys, like I said, and he starts unbuttoning his shirt. You know, we got to roll up our sleeves. And on one sleeve, he's got the F word. And on the other sleeve, he's got the name of the team we're playing. And the guys just lose it. You know, they go nuts in the locker room, where they, you know, go out there and, you know, play their butts off. But, you know, he had a way of getting the guys, you know, he was older. He didn't always, you know, couldn't always find the easiest ways to relate to everybody. But he, when it came time to help you win a game, man, he was awesome at getting those guys in the point where they were ready to go out there and win a game.
Yeah, nothing not to love with that, man. my favorite story we had, I was a manager in Minnesota, and he, like, it was my first year. I didn't really know him that well yet, you know, and he did all the recruiting visits. So, like, his detail on visits would be, like, he'd walk the path that you're going to walk. If there was, like, a fruit snack wrapper there, like, you better pick that up. Like, if the leaves needed raking, we had to move the leaves, like, everything on our whole path. But there was one morning, he's like, hey, Bender, will you meet me at the gym at, like, 6 in the morning? I'm like, I don't think twice of it. You know, it happened quite a bit. We'd have a workout at 6 a.m. And I said, all right, do you need me to bring anything up there? You need basketballs, pads, you know, what do you need for the workout? He's like, no, just get the lights on for me. I don't know how to turn the lights on. But they're in this random box in the back. You had to turn on the TV lights and the other lights, the overhead ones. So, you know, I wake up, it's 6 a.m. I'm hitting the lights, get there about 10 minutes early. I'm sitting in the stands just waiting, you know, waiting. It's a couple minutes after 6. And all of a sudden, him and our athletic trainer come onto the court at Williams Arena. And he's holding a fishing reel. He has a fly fishing rod, and he's teaching our athletic trainer how to fish at 6 in the morning in court. And I'm like, holy smokes, that's unbelievable. So when I
was awesome.
A bachelor party a few months back, and we went fly fishing, and I finally got to tell him, like, hey, reminded him of the story, and hey, I learned how to fly fish. He didn't teach me that day at 6 in the morning, but I eventually learned. But you said something really, a word that, you know, I think is a very controllable thing. So you said the word communication. And I know you guys have had some unique things, especially with your head coach now, Ed Radford. You had a lot of open communication. You know, players could kind of freely say some things at times. And talk a little bit about that, or how you've done a good job of communicating and connecting with players.
Yeah, I think that I don't like to think of myself as getting old, but it is a drastic change, even from 10 years ago, in my opinion, how we have to communicate with our players. and how the dialogue has to be a two-way street. And I think that we are in a generation, we serve a generation of kids that need to know why. They need to be involved in the process. And I have always believed that if it's me and you and we're having a discussion, and you're the head coach, and my input, you know, I have an idea of how I want to do it. If you let me give you my input, and then you say, you know what, Donnie, I appreciate that, but I'm going to go and do it the other way, I can then say, okay, I get it. You know, you want to do it this way. I hear your side. We might not necessarily see eye to eye, but I can agree. I can get behind that, and let's go get to work. If we walk into the meeting and you say, hey, I want to do this and this, and I don't give a shit what you say, Donnie, like, this is what we're going to do. Like, okay, then now I get a little bit of resentment built up in me. Like, you know, I want to at least let me get my pitch. Let me tell you what's going on. And then, you know, we can decide and we can hash it out. And I think our players are really the same way. Like, if we don't take the time to listen to them and ask them about how they see things, they're the ones out there that got to put the ball in the basket or get the stop. Like, they see it, you know, we think we see the game one way, and we do, but we're not out there dribbling. We're not out there making plays. We have to, in my opinion, you know, see what they're seeing, ask them what they're seeing, talk to them about what's going on, and then allow them to have that dialogue and actually listen to what they say. Don't, you know, again, it's cliche. And if you read any business book out there or leadership book, they're going to say you have to really listen, you know, when someone asks you, when you're talking to someone, and it's so important with our players. But I think before all that, you can't do that if you don't have a real relationship with them. If you don't spend time to get to know them and them to get to know you. Now, I think part of the blessing of me not being a good player and not having a background or a pedigree, I feel like when I meet a new player, I have to earn their trust that I can help them become the guy they want to be. You know, some guys have the luxury of like, hey, you can look up my name. You know, we just hired Brian Stith on staff. Like, you can Google Brian Stith and you're going to say, okay, that dude can probably help me become a better player. Played 10 years in the league. He's all-time leading scorer at Virginia. Like, okay, like, I got you. You know, you Google me, you're not going to get very much. So like, I love it because now I get to go and show you why you should trust me, why you should listen to me by listening to you, by figuring out where our commonalities are, by figuring out what the type of person you are and how we can relate on something, you know, other than basketball. It's not just going to be, you know, about basketball. It's going to be about life and helping you become the best person you can be and how I can help you there. And so if you don't take time to do that first, then the basketball communication, I think, really suffers. I think it's hard to then communicate about needs and what you need a guy to do or what you want a guy to do, because, you know, there's no trust there. There's no background of that. So, no, I don't think there's any sort of secret formula. I think it takes time. I think it takes sweating together on the court. I think it takes just sitting down and chopping it up and also asking deep questions and then listening to what they have to say. Now, we have a guy who comes in like a lot of people do and helps kind of break the ice on some of these conversations. And it's really good. You know, you have a weekend and then it comes in, Doc comes in and, you know, we chop it up and everybody kind of, you know, opens up a little bit about some stuff that, you know, happened in their life. And you realize that there's commonalities amongst your teammates or amongst your coaching staff that you might not have known you had. Because, you know, you don't look the same or you're not from the same place, but you really had a lot of the same experiences or similar experiences in life. And it's a great, but where I think we do a really good job as a staff and led by Coach Jones is like, it's not just a one weekend experience. No, it's central to what we do. And so following up and spending time and taking guys to lunch and having people over to my house to be with my family and, you know, and then not just have them sit there, but ask them some questions and talk to them and then listen and hear what they got to say about life. Now, I think it all starts there so that when I have a conversation with you about basketball or have a conversation with you about what we need from you or going to class or getting your stuff done in study hall, like we can have that conversation now with a baseline understanding of trust. And I'm going to listen and I'm going to try to help you as best I can, you know, navigate whatever we got to do. So. I think it's huge. I think it's the most important thing that we do, like actually talking and listening to our guys. Because at the end of the day, you know, we're going to win games, we're going to lose games, but you know, those relationships, those phone calls that you get, you know, 5-10 years down the road mean a lot more than that, than those, you know, one or two wins or losses.
For sure. Yeah. You said the word impactful questions are questions, you know, being a good listener, communicating, all those things kind of go hand in hand. And there's a group of questions I kind of like have in my back pocket for conversation starters and things like that. You know, is there, you know, you've given us some really good insight on, you know, the communication aspect of it. What is something that, you know, us as coaches, you know, should be paying attention to that we're not right now?
I mean, I you can ask anybody I work with. Like, I'm an attention to detail guy, and I think part of why I've been successful is that. And so I think you need to pay attention to everything. And Coach Jones is unbelievable at it. But we need to ask questions about what we see from our guys. You know, so if we see a guy with his head down, we need to ask him, hey, man, don't just say, hey, pick your head up. When you get an opportunity, maybe it's not right then, but, you know, he comes out of the drill, you put your arm around him and say, hey, you keep dropping your head. What's going on, man? Like, or maybe he won't answer then in practice, but now you've broken the ice for the next time. And I think we observe so many things that happen and let it just poof, you know, it's gone. You know, and so trying to be as observant as possible and then trying to note those things so that we can follow up and ask. Because our guys, I mean, I don't know about your guys, my guys can't hide how they're feeling very well. You know, they can't hide if they are walk into practice and they've had a rough day. You know, their girlfriend broke up with them, or they're got a bad grade on a test, or, you know, they cut class and we caught them. You know, like, they can't hide that stuff. They wear it all on their face every day. And so, you know, we, I think, do an exceptional job as a staff and led by Coach Jones of just bringing it to light. Like, we're not going to just let you get by, you know, on a subpar day. Like, you might not have a good day, but you're going to have to tell us why. You know, you're going to have to own that as soon as we notice it. One of our, you know, we talk about juice as a core value in our program. And for that, for us, that's enthusiasm, excitement, energy about whatever you do. So, you know, we're trying to gauge that as soon as somebody walks into the door to the building, you know, while they're getting taped. And certainly by the time they walk into the practice gym, you know, for a practice, you know, if somebody's not, you know, bringing the level of juice that they need to bring that day, like, it's going to get brought out and brought to light by our staff. And there's going to be a call out there, and we're going to have that conversation. And you know, it might, if you're lucky, it'll be one-on-one with you and the coach that notices to give you a chance before it's in the circle in front of the entire team. But you know, those just being super observant of the body language and the mood of our players, and then not being afraid to have that conversation. But again, I think it all starts with, you know, if I don't know you or you don't trust me, you know, now I try to have that conversation with you because I know, well, you know, there's easy resentment there from your player. But if they know that you care about them, that you trust them, that they're not just an X or an O to you, you know, that now you can have that conversation, and they're not resentful, and they know you want the best for them, and they know that they're not bringing their best at that moment.
Yeah, good stuff. Very, very impactful and informational there too at the same time. But, you know, sometimes we got to circle it back of reminding us why we do what we do, and the, you know, the communication aspect and having people's back and, you know, building that trust and those relationships are what this business is all about. We talked briefly a little bit about it, and, you know, we kind of reconnected because you were listening to a couple of these podcasts and you've been involved with Rising Coaches, and you're kind of in the same, you know, family tree of, you know, Andy Farrell with some Dayton ties and some, you know, different, you know, He was a VCU guy and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And, you know, talk a little bit about what Rising Coaches has done in your life, or why you think it's important, or the young guys in the profession, and being a, you know, someone we in essence could look up to as a guy that was a quote unquote manager and, you know, now a Division I assistant. Talk a little bit about Rising Coaches, what's meant to you, this podcast, you know, any type of words of wisdom, I guess, for these young Rising Coaches.
Yeah, no doubt. I think, you know, you talked about networking And it's, you know, Rising Coaches, those guys, you know, just again, getting connected with them when I was super young in the business has given me guys that I can ask questions of, lean on. And you know, the fun thing for me to see is how everyone has, you know, moved to different places at different rates and different levels and doing different things. And so now you have people all over the coaching world that can be an ear for you. Like I told you, like the reason we're doing this is because I was listening to the podcast, because I listen to a lot of podcasts, but this is one that I certainly try to listen to, you know, just about every time they come on, if I can. I'm a podcast while running guy. And so I might not get quite every nugget, but at least it helps me get through the run. But it reminded me to shoot you a text and just say, hey man, I appreciate the podcast, and got us talking. And, you know, it wasn't us talking about me recruiting your players. So it was a different angle that we're having the conversation about, but I think that we need to look for ways to be authentic with the people that we know in this business, you know, because just like with our players, like it's a special group of people that do this job, and we have a unique bond, whether we've worked together or whether we know someone who's worked for you, or you just build a relationship because we've had a shared experience. I think a group like Rising Coaches allows guys who, you know, might not physically work together, but you understand that the other guys or the other people who are doing in the group or who are on the forum with you, or they're in the Zoom webinar, whatever it might be, like you have a shared experience now. And now you have something that can connect you and allow you to, you know, have a conversation and just be yourself with that person and be genuine and see, you know, how that can allow you to grow in the business and allow you to meet new people. Because at the end of the day, none of us are getting this thing done by ourselves. You know, I am more than anyone, I feel like I require everybody I know's help to get what I've gotten so far, and, you know, really rely on the people who have helped me and continue to help me with whatever I'm going through or whatever I'm trying to do next. And, you know, Rising Coaches and the opportunity to, you know, pick the minds of guys who have done what you want to do. You know, that's awesome. That's awesome. And so, and the more opportunities we can to do that, we got to.
Heard it from the best right there, Donnie Lynn. UNC Greensboro. Coach, thanks again for being on the podcast tonight. And anything else you want to add?
No, I appreciate it. I'm certainly, like I said earlier, like I'm happy to be a resource. I sound like a broken record, but it takes a lot of people for me to get what I want, or for me to get, you know, in this business, any level of success, whether it's our players, whether it's the other coaches, whether it's, you know, people who have helped me get this far. So anybody who wants to pick my brain or needs somebody, an ear to listen to, I like to think I'm a pretty good listener. I'll, you know, certainly spend some time with you anytime.
Well, sounds good. Thanks for having our back. Thanks for being, you know, Rising Coaches loyal listeners on the podcast. So thanks again and have a good night.
No problem, Ben. Good to talk to you.